Hello.
Hello, hi.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Okay, well, thank you for being here with us today. I want to introduce you before we begin. We are here with Christy Thornton, professor at Johns Hopkins University in the Sociology Department and the Latin American Studies Department. Professor Thornton, do you want to add anything?
No, that's right.
Okay, great. Well, today we're going to talk about the upcoming Mexican elections, and they're July 1st, right?
Yeah, that's right. They're coming up really soon.
Yeah, and from what I've read, it seems like Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who I guess is sometimes referred to as AMLO, is the clear front runner. Could you talk a little bit about who he is, who makes up his base, and some of his policy proposals?
Yeah, absolutely. So López Obrador, AMLO, as you said, he's called by his initials in Mexico. He's running with a new party that he created actually in between 2012 and 2014. He put together this party called the Movement for National Regeneration. And that party is a response to the way that traditional party politics have worked in Mexico. He left the kind of traditional party structure to create this new left-leaning social movement-based kind of movement. He's run for president twice before, in 2006 and in 2012. In 2006, he came really close to winning, within sort of a half percentage point. There was probably fraud in that election. The ruling party, the PRI, and the right-wing party, the PAN, there is evidence of a great deal of fraud in that particular election. So he came very close to winning. He ran again in 2012, and came much less close to winning. People were much less interested in 2012 in what he had to say. Now that he's running again, he's really caught the attention of Mexicans, I think, on a number of issues. Economics, absolutely. He has a kind of progressive economic platform. He talks about raising retirement benefits for old people, better education for young people, more jobs, bringing back agricultural jobs for Mexicans that have been lost since NAFTA. And so those kinds of economic policies are really important. He also talks a lot about corruption, and that I think is really the key to his campaign. In the years since Mexico really started being a democracy, which is since about 2000 when they've had really contested presidential elections, there has been rampant and massive corruption at all levels of government. And so, from the time that he ran in 2006, when there was this fraud forward, that has been really a key part of his campaign, is to say we want to root out the corruption in government, the way in which people use government to make themselves rich, and then also the connections between the government and Mexican business people, and on the legitimate side, and then on the non-legitimate side, the drug cartels. So he really wants to root out corruption in order to be able to spend Mexico's government's money on more kind of progressive social policies. So those are the most important things that he's really been campaigning on.
I imagine that some of those people who've benefited from the corruption would be upset by this. What's been their response? What's been the response of the elite?
Yeah, absolutely. So he has had tremendous pushback this entire campaign, and really since he began running for president in 2006. Prior to that, he was the mayor of Mexico City, and he was a pretty popular mayor. He actually worked closely with Carlos Slim, who is, one of the richest men in the world, this Mexican billionaire, to revitalize downtown Mexico City. And so he did have some support, and he does now have some support from some parts of the business class, but he's fighting very much with Carlos Slim at the moment over the building of this new airport in Mexico City that Carlos Slim is financing. And a whole host of other kind of business leaders have been campaigning very strongly against him. So signing an open letter, there is a kind of whisper campaign, and even out in social media saying, if you vote for Andrés Manuel, you will turn Mexico into Venezuela, saying that, he's like Hugo Chavez. Prior to this, he was likened to Fidel Castro. And so there is very much a kind of scare campaign. And there is absolutely fear among those who benefit from the corruption. One of the main kind of aspects of his platform is the idea that he is going to root, when he roots out the corruption in government, the way in which government contracts are given to cronies, government spending on unnecessary things, government spending on homes and fancy cars and those kinds of things for elected officials, that he'll be able to use that money to benefit social programs. And so people who have been enriching themselves as the mayors and the governors all across the country are definitely looking at that and thinking that their moment might be up.
And let's talk about the illegitimate elite drug cartels. How have they responded to his, if at all, to his campaign?
Yeah, that's a hard one. He has been, in the main, being a little bit vague about what he wants to do about the quote unquote war on drugs in Mexico, right? So the war on drugs as we know it in Mexico really began in 2006, 2007 under the former president Felipe Calderón. And Calderón decided what he was going to do to try and get the drug trade under control was to send the military into the streets. Mexico's police are really famously corrupt. They've all been bought off by these drug cartels. And so because they're paid nothing and there's no room for advancement. So the police forces at all levels were thought to be completely ineffectual. So they sent the military into the streets. And actually, that was against Mexican law. That was against the Mexican constitution. And so the current president, Enrique Peña Nieto, who is from the PRI, the party that ruled Mexico for 70 years before democracy came, he actually pushed through a law, this very controversial law called the Law of Internal Security, which legalizes the use of the military in Mexican territory. It's just like the United States, you know, the police are supposed to be law enforcement domestically with the military doing things outside of the borders. And the same is true in Mexico until this recent law was passed. And so Andrés Manuel has not said a lot about the internal security law. He's been pretty careful about that, about not making people nervous. He has said that he's interested in offering amnesty to low-level drug dealers, right? To the people who are sort of the low-level employees of drug cartels, people in places like Sinaloa, who where there is no formal economy and the things that they can do, right, is the same as in places here in the United States. The jobs that actually pay are jobs working for the narcos. And so he has said one policy that he's interested in looking at is to offer amnesty to those people. If they come forward, if they lay down their guns, that they could get some kind of a government-funded job and be able to leave the narco-trafficking world. He's also, on occasion, mentioned the legalization of some drugs. Obviously, he's really bound in that by the United States. And here in the United States, under Trump, and particularly under Attorney General Jeff Sessions, we have this return to a kind of punitive, very militaristic vision of the drug war. And so he will be very sort of constrained in what he can do based on the attitude of what's happening in the United States. That was starting to loosen a little bit under Obama, and we've seen a shift back towards a more militarized, more punitive drug war now in the Trump administration. So that's going to tie his hands a little bit.
You know, two of the big issues here, obviously, are immigration and NAFTA. You mentioned that a lot of farmers in Mexico were hurt by NAFTA and that Obrador would like to somehow help these people. Is he interested in renegotiating NAFTA?
Yeah, absolutely. So on both of those things, immigration and trade, these have been huge, huge things for López Obrador during the campaign. On trade, on NAFTA, he has repeatedly said that he wants them to pause the negotiations until after the elections, until after it's clear who the new president will be. And in some ways that makes sense, right? Because the outgoing administration is kind of a lame duck administration. It's very unpopular. So the idea that they are the people renegotiating this economic policy that will bind Mexico going forward doesn't make much sense. So he's been arguing for a long time to kind of delay those negotiations.
Can I just interrupt really quickly?
Yeah.
How might he negotiate the deal differently than the current government?
Yeah, so the current government is very much in line with the way that U.S.-Mexico trade policy has existed since the implementation of NAFTA in 1994, which is to say for further open borders against any kinds of protections for industry or agriculture in Mexico. Now, of course, we still have protections for agriculture and industry here in the United States, and those are the kinds of things that have hurt Mexican farmers so much. So we continue to subsidize through the Farm Bill every year U.S. producers of corn and soybeans and those kinds of things. And that makes Mexican producers less competitive.
Right. And it also, my understanding is that if you're not growing corn, then you might get into the drug business. So, I mean,
yeah, if you don't have any kind of alternative way of life, then it has definitely pushed people to look for other ways to make money. And the informal economy is not just in the drug business, it's selling things on the street, right? But the informal economy is massive in Mexico. And when the countryside was so devastated after NAFTA, people surged into the cities. And so you have this kind of massive unemployment in the cities and really employment in the informal sector. That is, people aren't being paid formally, paying taxes, those kinds of things. The Mexican minimum wage is really low. It's the lowest in Latin America.
Wow.
So those questions of kind of trying to move people out of that part of the economy and restart some kind of agricultural growth for Mexico are really important. So things that he might do differently in NAFTA is to, for instance, meet the subsidies that the United States uses for its agricultural policy, right? Mm-hmm. He might say, if you have these, if these subsidies, we should have these subsidies as well. Questions about oil are really important. Mexican production of oil and the investments of foreign companies there. But really he has promised to keep some of the most important parts of NAFTA, which have to do with the manufacturings, what's called the maquila industry, the factories that are along the border, mm-hmm. maquiladoras, where the companies are U.S. and Mexican owned companies, and the supply chains, that is how stuff is manufactured and goes back and forth across the border, are completely integrated. And he said that he actually wants to deepen that. He wants there to be a total duty-free zone at the border.
Wow.
So there are things that he wants to deepen in NAFTA, but other things that he wants to change, and protecting farmers and protecting rural people, getting more economic development into the southern part of the country. And that's where his base is. His base is much more in the southern part of the country, rural people, working people. He's also very popular with highly educated urban, sort of college educated people, mm-hmm. In the big cities. But the manufacturing base in the north is something that he has promised to keep. And then with regard to immigration, he has actually promised what would be a massive change. And this is really a lever that Mexico has vis-a-vis the United States, is that over the last decade or so, Mexico has really taken on a lot of the United States' dirty work when it comes to border enforcement by sending a massive military installation to Mexico's southern border. So the southern border between Mexico and Guatemala is now highly militarized, mm-hmm. highly blocked off, and Mexico actually does a great deal of the work of turning away Central American migrants for the United States. AMLO has said he's not interested in doing that, that he wants to move the center of migration north up to the northern border. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want to keep doing this kind of militarized turning away and punishment of Central American migrants. He said Mexico will take care of migrants. And so if that happens, that is a really big change in policy vis-a-vis the United States.
My sense of just hearing from you and reading a little bit is he doesn't sound like Castro or Chavez. He sounds somewhat, right. somewhat more like Bernie Sanders. He doesn't seem radical. Is my sense right? Or is he radical in some areas and not in others?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think that's a really good comparison. López Obrador is a lifelong politician, right? He presents himself as an outsider, but he has been holding elected office and kind of working in this world basically his entire adult life. And so in that way, he's kind of like Bernie Sanders in that he refuses to align with the kind of traditional alignment of the parties, right? He broke off and he started his own party, the way that Bernie Sanders has said that he's a democratic socialist and not a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And many of his policies are the same, right? And so he's very pragmatic. He's very pragmatic in recognizing the limits that Mexico faces vis-a-vis the United States, the limits that he faces in national policy, you know, vis-a-vis his own, the business interests there in Mexico. The coalition that he has put together for running this campaign has been very broad and has actually earned him a lot of criticism from people on the left, from people who are part of the kind of social movement beginnings of his party, people who really put a lot of faith in his radicalism. Mm-hmm. There has been a great deal of criticism because he has thrown himself in, for instance, one of the parties in the coalition that he's running with is a party called Encuentro Social, Social Encounter. Mm. And they are a radical right-wing evangelical party.
Oh, wow.
They are anti-abortion. They are anti-gay marriage. They are really a very right-wing, you know, one of the sort of part of a growing wave of evangelical power in Latin America. Mm-hmm. And so he's gotten a lot of criticism from people in the left part of his coalition and to his left for this alignment. But the Encuentro Social is influential in places where his base is not influential. And so he put them together in the coalition to kind of help his electoral chances. So you see those kinds of things throughout this whole campaign. He has really very much moderated his stance. People tend to think of him, there's lots of criticism that says that he's messianic, that he thinks that only him can solve the problems, right? But I don't see that in his campaigning. I don't see a kind of religious fervor. I think that there is very much a sense that the Mexican political system is broken, and that it can't be fixed through the kind of established means, through the established parties, the parties that have existed now for decades. And so he created this new social movement-based party to kind of break out of that. But at the same time, he has been incredibly pragmatic and brought together this very broad coalition. So I think you're right that he's more of a Bernie Sanders than a Fidel Castro. And that might be exactly what Mexico needs right now.
Do you read this election as a rejection of not just the PAN, but also the PRI and the policies in the last 30 years or so of neoliberalism? Or is this really just about small tweaks around NAFTA and around immigration, but not wanting systemic change?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So what has happened over the last three elections in Mexico, the kind of three democratic elections that have happened since 2000? 2000 was the first year that voters rejected the PRI for the first time, right, and brought in the right-leaning, business-oriented National Action Party, the PAN. And they were in power for 12 years. And during that time, because of the growing insecurity, because of the drug war, economic growth was laggard, people said, you know what, maybe we were better off under the PRI. Maybe things were better when we had the PRI in power. And so they brought, by a very narrow margin, brought the PRI back to power in 2012. The current president, Enrique Peña Nieto, he won 38% of the vote. And Mexico doesn't have a second round. So that was enough to elect him president.
Okay.
And now, after having tried the right-wing opposition, having gone back to the PRI, there's very much a sense that says, you know what, the whole system is broken. All of these parties are corrupt. They're all part of the problem. And so we need to reject the PRI, especially, is incredibly unpopular. Their candidate is running in a far distant third place with well below 20% of the vote.
Wow.
And the kind of rejection of politics as usual, and the idea that Andrés Manuel represents something that stands outside of an incredibly corrupt system, I think, is the thing that voters are really hooking onto in this election and where they're pinning their hopes.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you again for giving us your time this afternoon. And this was great and really informative for me. I think we'll post this sometime this week. And when we do, I will send you an email and let you know.
Perfect.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.